Welcome everyone to episode 4 of the Premier Pod. I'm your host, Yash Bika, joined by my co-host,
Tyler Chan.
And today we have a fun episode planned for you guys. We're going to talk about the Manchester United meltdown, Liverpool top of the league, City dropping points, and some other notable games. So why don't we just get it started with the Manchester United meltdown, losing 3-0 at home to Tottenham. It was the biggest defeat in the Jose Mourinho era at Manchester United. And a lot of my United fans, I'm a United fan myself, a lot of my friends that are United fans, were just like, you know, this is the tail end of Mourinho. This is like, he's dead wood now. You know, he doesn't need to be at the club. And, you know, I wasn't able to catch the game because of an event that I had to go to. But, you know, people that have, like, watched the game, they've told me that United just didn't look all that confident. And, like, I wouldn't be surprised by that because coming from the previous two games, United have looked very, very bad. I don't know. Is that the feeling you get, Tyler?
I would say United did something that I didn't usually see from United from previous seasons with Mourinho, is that they pressed, they attacked. This is something that we don't usually see, and we saw that with their formation of 3 in the back, 5 in the midfield, but even more than that. Yeah, I would say even more.
Yeah, it's Matic, Fred, Pogba, and who am I forgetting? Somebody I'm forgetting. Am I forgetting someone? No, Herrera played in center back. Yeah, forget about that.
But they played one striker, which is why I was kind of confused about where there's 5 or 6 in the midfield. But I mean, it worked, I would say, for part of the first half because Lukaku had a clear opportunity after a Danny Rose
back pass.
Bad back pass.
And it was like the Lukaku miss. It wasn't even like a tight angle. Like, it was like you could clearly see that he had enough room to, like, you know, just use his right foot to get it. And he's good enough to use his right foot to do it.
Exactly.
And he just pulled it wide and he missed it.
It was a bottled moment.
Yeah.
As SpongeBob would say, soiled it.
Soiled it. He juked the keeper and then he missed the open goal. He just didn't really look where he was shooting.
Yeah.
I think that's where he went wrong.
And that kind of worries me. Like, there's a lot of things that worry me about this United team, but Lukaku missing that kind of worries me because he hasn't looked very sharp the games he's come on. He came on for like 20 minutes against Leicester and he missed a clear-cut chance to, you know, put United up again. And then at Brighton, his one goal kind of came out of a lucky bounce and it fell on his head. And overall than that, Lukaku just doesn't look like the Lukaku we saw in the World Cup or last summer, which is kind of disappointing and kind of scary for me.
But I would say, despite that, United did look pretty good. For the first 24 minutes, Tottenham didn't register a shot.
Yeah.
That was pretty surprising. With Kane, Dele Alli, and
Mora
up there. Mora playing center forward.
Too. Yeah.
That was also surprising.
I think with United, they did look good because with the injection of Jesse Lingard. Because I think even though people like to give Lingard a lot of crap or just a lot of like stick for, like, you know, he showboats too much, he doesn't. People just look at his dancing and not really look at his overall play. I think he's a very good player in terms of, like, he's always willing to press, always willing to run back, always willing to put in the dirty work for the team. And, you know, he's gotten a lot better going forward because I remember when he first broke into the United team under Louis van Gaal, he showed flashes of what he could be, but it was not very consistent. But now he's gotten to the point where he is being consistent and he can, you know, perform well at a high level. And I think with him taking out Juan Mata, it just provided more of a pressing fortitude, and you saw in the game, in the highlights I saw, Fred was very much pushing up high and, you know, using his, like, his legs to get on, you know, the center backs for Tottenham and getting on the midfielders, specifically Moussa Dembele, because Moussa Dembele did give up the ball a couple of times. But the first goal that United did concede, it was off a corner, and this has been like something that United have struggled with for so long, even in Mourinho's tenure. It's just been set pieces. For some reason, whenever a team gets a set piece, I'm always fearing for my life because I feel like United are just going to concede. I just don't understand. I just don't understand what the guy like Mourinho, how can you be so bad at set pieces?
That was Liverpool for like years. So it'll happen. But I was also kind of curious about how United are kind of making their defense because this is a whole other set of defenders coming into this game. And then, as we mentioned, and a hint earlier, Herrera was center back this game. Can you talk about Herrera playing center back?
Honestly, as much as I followed United, I've never once seen Herrera ever slot into the center back position, so I don't know what was going on through Mourinho's mind, but I could see why he did it because he definitely, throughout this entire summer, he was basically telling everyone that he wanted a center back. He wanted a center back. He wanted a new center back. Harry Maguire, Jerome Boateng, at one point Diego Godin, whoever. He wanted to bring somebody new because obviously he didn't trust, he didn't have a lot of faith in the two center backs he brought in under his tenure, Victor Lindelof and Eric Bailly. And you saw how bad they were, like, last week against Brighton. They were, like, awful. Like, Bailly in specific was just awful. Like, he was all over the place making rash challenges. And, you know, I just think Mourinho just doesn't have confidence in his center backs. And that's been a staple of Mourinho teams that win titles, is that strong center back, like that John Terry or that Sergio Ramos, you know, that leader back there. And United don't have that. And they haven't had that since, like, Rio Ferdinand and Nemanja Vidic retired. And for that, for like Mourinho's sake, he kind of saw the weakness in the team. But I think Ed Woodward and the board kind of saw the age. Like, you know, Victor Lindelof and Eric Bailly are very young, and they assume that, you know, as time goes on, they're going to be really good. But they just seem to be they took, like, a huge step back from the progression they made last year and the season before. But I think that's the center-back position. But I do have to give a credit to Luke Shaw. I think Luke Shaw has performed. I think he's been United one of United's best players for, like, these three games, even though it's kind of hard to pick a best player considering how bad they are. I think Luke Shaw has definitely showed Mourinho how good he is, and, like, he's definitely fighting to, like, you know, either stay at United or, you know, move on to another club if he seems like that's a better opportunity. And it was also interesting, after the game, after the defeat, Luke Shaw was on the pitch, I guess in the middle of the pitch, and Mourinho went up to him, and, like, you know how Klopp puts his arm around the players? He put his arm around the players.
I also noticed that, too.
And, like, you know, probably gave Luke Shaw words of encouragement, so it seems like Luke Shaw's kind of earned the trust of Mourinho, and that can only bode well for him as a young left back.
Yeah, I found that very interesting when I saw Mourinho, no buddy with Shaw. It's like, hey, don't worry. I'm like, whoa, what is happening?
Yeah, it's like one of those plot twists in a movie.
Yeah, it was M. Night Shyamalan right there. But I also did notice that one of your defenders, Antonio Valencia, also came back. Although he did play kind of right wing back for this game. Would you say that is a big boost, or did he have...
I would say so, because he was one of United's most consistent performers last season. But Mourinho did say that he felt like Antonio Valencia took too long of a vacation when he came back for his first preseason game and he got his ankle hurt. So I don't know what's going on with the whole Valencia-Mourinho thing now, because Valencia is Manchester United's captain, and, like, your manager's basically calling you out for not being disciplined. I mean, that's not good for a captain. I mean, as a captain, you're supposed to be the leader, the disciplinary. But I think it's a good boost, because I definitely think it's a lot better than having Ashley Young, because Ashley Young is much better at, like, left wing back than he is right wing back. So that can only bode well. And with the Diego Dalot, the new signing from Porto, the right back who can also play left back as well, I read news that he just recently started training. So hopefully, you know, once he gets going, he can finally, like, slot in and, like, kind of work Valencia out of the team, because Valencia is, like, 33 or 34, I think. And, you know, he's going to be declining, and he doesn't have the same amount of pace he once had. So it's going to be nice to see Dalot kind of, like, you know, take that right back spot, hopefully, if everything goes well.
Yeah, that was a surprise signing as well that I noticed. I didn't – no one
– Yeah, no one knew. Apparently Mourinho says he's one of the best fullbacks. I mean, I don't know. That's why he's manager for Manchester United at this point. I mean, I don't know.
And FIFA is just, like, a non-rare silver.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay.
I think everyone, once, like, United were interested in him, I think everyone went on FIFA to see his rating. I guess beyond that, you just didn't really see much in the second half for United. I mean, they brought on Fellaini, which is always their plan B option. They just hit the long balls, and, like, that never works, because it's just, like, you know, it's just a long ball up to Fellaini. There's only so much you can do. But I do have to give credit to Tottenham and credit to Mauricio Pochettino, because if one thing, Mourinho has had Pochettino's back since he's been at United, particularly at home. Maybe, like, Pochettino has, like, owned Mourinho away from home, but when it comes to Old Trafford, Mourinho always seems to outclass Pochettino in terms of tactics or anything, but it seems like Pochettino kind of got it right this time. And, you know, all credit to him and all credit to his side. I mean, Harry Kane took his chance, you know, his first goal scoring at Old Trafford, took his header, and then Moura was just an absolute monster. I mean, he literally ran through, like, the midfield and scored an insane goal for, like, the third and final goal. But, you know, credit to Tottenham. I think a lot of people kind of brushed away Tottenham because they made no summer signings. They didn't really invest in the squad. But, you know, maybe Daniel Levy kind of knows what he's doing. And, you know, Pochettino trusts his squad that much that he's like, you know, I don't need any more signings, which is kind of risky. But, I mean, if Moura can come back and look like anything, the player that PSG signed, I mean, that's a pretty good signing in itself.
Yeah, I agree. I also do want to mention that United, as I did sort of hint at this before, but United are starting to play a little bit more attacking. And then United, historically, have just been more defensive.
Yeah. And well, very in slow. Recent seasons, yeah.
Yeah, recent seasons. And they're really slow to build up play, one of the slowest in the Premier League. So I would say Moura did have a really good game, but also he was facing a defense that was not really used to this kind of new attacking.
Yeah. And I feel like as much as like Mourinho's, as much as people like to say the Manchester United's defense is really good, I feel like it also kind of like goes hand in hand with the system they play, because they're kind of shielded, like the defenders are kind of shielded from like one-on-one situations so much because the midfielders are so back and like the forwards are playing so back that, you know, they really can't be exposed. And I noticed that too whenever United do try to press front forward or try to go forward and play like Liverpool, play like City, you know, be on the attacking front. That's when they're center backs, and that's when you kind of see the quality kind of being exposed, because they're just not that good as like center backs, or not Manchester United quality talent. So I think it's just like I don't know what else Mourinho can do, because, you know, if he tries to go more forward, he doesn't trust his defense that much to, you know, kind of stay back and, you know, be able to defend counterattacks. And if he plays too defensive, people are just going to criticize him for playing too defensive. So he's got himself in a hole, and United do need to pick up points if their hope is to. I know title seems out of place, but, you know, it's still very early in the season. You know, you could still challenge for the title, but more importantly, getting top four again, which is very important for United, because as a brand, they need Champions League to, you know, show off their brand. So United definitely need to pick up points, and Mourinho really needs to figure out what he needs to do as a squad. But I do think I did see this. I know this is I know, like, you know how every team kind of does this thing where, like, if they have a bad loss, all the players will go on social media and be like, now we stand together and all that. Mm-hmm. As a United fan, I kind of have the thing, like, you know, why post on Twitter? Why not just go and practice and train and beat the other team? But also, I kind of, like, I'm, like, hoping that, you know, they can galvanize after this and just, you know, show everyone up. But it'll be interesting to see what happens. I mean, I know a lot of fans don't like it when players go to social media after defeat. They said, like, you know, just put up and shut up and just, you know, go back to practice and stuff like that. I mean, how do you feel about that?
I would say this is a new era of, like, just technology in general. So you can't really avoid players trying to interact with, like, the audience directly. Or fans, I would say. Because before, you'd usually be like, the players would speak to a reporter. A reporter would tell everyone through a report from a newspaper or an online article. But now, with players having Instagrams, Twitters, even Facebooks, if they still use that, they can directly say messages like that to try to, you know, talk to their audience. So I would say there are some players that do that more, but I'm kind of indifferent about whether or not they should.
Yeah, I think as like as a fan, it's kind of just nice to see that, you know, the player acknowledges the bad defeat, and, you know, I mean, it sure probably doesn't mean anything, yeah. But at the end of the day, it's kind of nice to see as a fan, just to see something there that kind of boosts your spirits up a little bit.
Yeah, I would say.
But one quick question. I know it's probably everyone's going to ask this question. Do you think Mourinho will last this entire season, or do you think he's gone? If you think he's gone, tell me when he's going to be gone.
I would say there are some people that I've been talking to as well, and things I've been reading about, where people are looking at this season, and then they're thinking about the last season he was at Chelsea, where it was just like almost near relegation for Chelsea. I would say it looks unlikely, in my opinion, that it's going to happen again, because based on United's performance against Spurs, although they did lose 3-0, there were some opportunities where if they did finish it, would have been a whole different game.
Yeah,
if
Lukaku puts in that chance, you never know, like, you know, United can sit back and then just hit Tottenham on a big break and exactly. Make it 2-0.
So I would say I'm a little optimistic, but I don't see
Mourinho. That's nice to hear from a Liverpool fan. It's nice to hear. I'm so pessimistic about my team. It's nice to hear that.
Yeah, I'm pessimistic about my team. That's how we're fans. But I would say if United continue to lose, if that does happen, and then Mourinho fails to find some kind of identity, some kind of
consistency
to continue to attack or eventually try to revert back to just playing a little bit more conservative and then still not get any results. And if they're at mid-table, I'd say December, I would say maybe by roughly January or February, they'd probably sack him and then maybe bring in someone like
Zizou.
It's kind of a far-fetched thing to say, but when Brendan Rodgers was a manager of Liverpool, we're like, there's no way we can get rid of him. He's like, he's just there. It's like Fellaini at Man U. You just can't get rid of him. But then all of a sudden we got Klopp. I'm like, oh my gosh. So miracles can happen.
Yeah. I mean, as a United fan, I think he'll ride the ship and kind of figure stuff out. I feel like it's been kind of regression to the mean in terms of like how they were playing. So it's like, you can't really expect him to play too well, but I think he's going to figure it out eventually. Hopefully soon, so you know, United can get back in the top four. But
I would say, for a final question for this kind of topic.
Yeah.
As a Man U fan, Yoshibika, do you like Mourinho?
Do I like Mourinho? All right. In a sense, all right, there's like two ways to look at it. One way, I do like Mourinho because he's a cutthroat manager and he's like a cerebral winner in terms of he's going to get you trophies and all that. And he did get his trophy. He did get United trophies his first season. Do I like the way he plays? Of course not. I mean, as like any soccer fan would love to like have their team play attacking football all the time. But, you know, that's the nature of the beast. You know, not every manager plays, you know, like Klopp or like Pep Guardiola. But I think like he needs to kind of adapt to the times a little bit because in the past, you know, when he did enter the Premier League, you know, you could win the league just playing very defensive. And he's been so successful being a very defensive manager. But you've seen in recent trends, coaches like Klopp, Pochettino, Pep Guardiola. I mean, the list goes on. Thomas Tuchel, like at PSG, and so many other managers out there. And Unai Emery, who have been successful and who have kind of gone away from that structured defensive side that, like, you know, that have, like, shaped, you know, football for so long. And they've revamped that, you know, and playing more offensive, playing high press. Because I think it read somewhere where Klopp said the best defense is winning the ball back as soon as possible. And that's so true because, you know, you kind of exert more energy in terms of that. Like when you do high press, but you get the ball, you know, in a better position half the time. Because, you know, whenever United win back the ball, they're winning it at their own half. And the only thing they can do is lump it forward. While Liverpool or City win the ball back, they're winning it at the opponent's half. That way, all somebody has to do is go to the byline, cross it, and then somebody's in. So I think, you know, Mourinho, you saw in the Tottenham game that Mourinho may look to change, kind of like tinker his philosophy just a little bit, just to, you know, be more in the advanced times. But I'm like so-so in Mourinho, in the 50-50 for Mourinho. I know that nobody likes to hear that, but it's just like I kind of like him in some games. In some games, I just don't like him. I don't know. It's a love-hate relationship with Mourinho. And I think that's what every fan is like. You either love the guy or you hate him.
Gotcha.
But that's enough with Man U. They're in crisis mode right now. We'll see how they can bounce back, if they bounce back. I'm just scared. I'm scared. I don't know what to feel like. This is unseen territory. This is like David Moyes all over again.
Well, maybe we'll get some more memes out of it. That's the goal.
But one of United's biggest rivals, Liverpool, are absolutely killing it in the league. 3 games, 3 wins. The past two games, they haven't looked as impressive as they did the first week against West Ham. But at the end of the day, they got 3 points, which at the end of the day matters the most because, you know, they're not dropping points against these lesser teams. And they're not losing to these teams, which is the most important thing. And their big players are performing well. You know, they beat Brighton this past weekend 1-0. Tyler, what did you kind of see from that game that kind of showed you that Liverpool are, like, you know, legit?
I would say this season in particular, we've seen Liverpool, they're not as insane in offense as we've seen from last season. They're not scoring 3-4 goals.
Yeah, either. 5.
Although they did against West Ham, but West Ham are very bad right now.
Yeah.
But they are getting the W's against the smaller teams, such as Brighton or other teams that they historically struggled against.
Crystal Palace.
Thank God Dwight Gale's not on the team anymore. Oh my gosh. But this is something that we never thought Liverpool would, or a Liverpool fan would say about Liverpool, and is that they're keeping clean sheets.
Yeah. I mean, that's like, are you kidding me? That's crazy because Liverpool, when you mention Liverpool, you just laugh at their defense and just like, oh my gosh, their attacking talent is so good. But it seems like Klopp found a good balance finally.
Which is interesting to say because usually when you think of Klopp, you don't think of Klopp having
clean sheets
or a very good defense. You just think of him as heavy middle football, outscore your opponent 5-4 and get the W that way.
Yeah.
But as you saw from this past game, although Liverpool had 22 shots, they only got one goal. And I would say not all their chances were that good. They were
they weren't that clinical. They had a few shots on target, but they weren't shots that I would say would go in against a Premier League keeper.
And a good thing about that is, like, compared to United, if United, when they won against Leicester City, like, 2-1, they didn't create that many chances. But for Liverpool, they are creating a lot of chances. It's just they're not putting them away, which is, I guess that's a good thing, good problem to have. At least it shows people that you are creating them. It's just a matter of time when your strikers kind of get their mojo back and, like, you know, can start scoring crazy amount of goals, you know?
Yeah, there were a few good looks from Firmino and Mane as well. But, and also, Alexander-Arnold, he had a few shots. Even Robertson, too.
Yeah. But I think, Alexander-Arnold, he had that one free kick.
He had a free kick. Yeah. Hit the crossbar.
Yeah, I do remember that. Yeah, that was crazy.
But the highlight of this game really was the Liverpool defense. They have not conceded a goal at Anfield for 600 minutes of game time, which is...
That's pretty dope. That's pretty good. And, like, it also helps that you have Alisson. Alisson, like, you know, he's made some mean... Like, I think against Brighton, he did make a big save. I can't remember who shot it, but, it was basically a match-winning save. And a three-point save, you know how, like, the cliche, that's a match-winning save. He made a match-winning save, something that... I know it seems like a routine save to make, but, you know, it's all about the moment. You know, like, De Gea would have made that save, but you wouldn't trust Lloris Karius or Simon Mignolet to make a save in that type of moment. You know, he could have probably made the save 5 minutes in the game, but in that moment, you know, I couldn't trust those guys. But Alisson has definitely impressed me as, like, a top-tier goalkeeper.
Exactly. It was, I would say, around the last third of the game where he made that save you're talking about, particularly where a header was just hit towards the goal or on target from, I would say, right outside the penalty box.
Yeah.
And he dove, like, almost instantly.
Yeah.
And the thing that really impressed me the most was not really his saves from maybe that point blank range. It was his comfort on the ball.
Distribution.
He tried to juke people.
Yeah. I think it was in this game he almost got in trouble with
that. He almost did get in trouble, which I assume will happen sometime during this season because it will inevitably happen when you try to juke every single player that rushes you. But there were some instances where he completely just, like, broke someone's ankles or, like, just made someone just go the completely wrong way. And you could hear Anfield just cheer because for once we have a keeper that we're proud to say is the number, I'd say not number one since he's wearing the number 13, but I guess I would say the number one keeper that is trying to protect our goal.
Yeah.
That's something that's insane. And then also Joe Gomez playing another game. Lovren is still trying to get his fitness back after coming back from the World Cup. Allegedly.
Yeah, you mentioned this week one in the podcast that you kind of see Gomez kind of staking his place and keeping that spot, which, I mean, Gomez looked freaking phenomenal for me, so why change what's working?
That's true. But as we had Lovren for a few seasons now, and he has been the main kind of center back for Van Dijk during last season, too, even during the Champions League final.
Yeah.
So we'll see if Gomez and Van Dijk will continue to be a good partnership, and then maybe Klopp will decide on the spot whether or not to just keep this partnership going as long as he can.
And I guess good problem, he has depth. He can rotate. Yeah,
this is something that's also needed to prepare depth in the defense.
Rotation. And rotation then, across the starting 11, to be
exactly.
honest.
Exactly. And Milner doesn't have to play left back.
Yeah.
And speaking about Milner, he's also the, in terms of midfield, Wijnaldum, Keita, Milner, same three in the midfield. Keeping Henderson, Fabinho on the bench.
Yeah,
surprisingly.
I guess looking at this, I don't think Klopp wants to play Henderson and Keita at the same time, right? Because they kind of man the same type of, like, I know Keita likes to go forward more, but for Henderson's sake, he kind of like sit there in the defensive holding spot. Or is it Milner? He doesn't want to play Milner and Henderson together. Am I getting those two mixed up?
I think. Historically, there have been a few games where Milner and Henderson have played together. I honestly don't know why Henderson is not making it into this midfield
Do you think he should be taking Wijnaldum's spot?
That's the thing, because I don't think that he would replace any of these players. I think he should just be rotating just for fitness sake. But then again, if they're all in form, you shouldn't rotate anyway.
Yeah.
So that kind of makes sense. But he's also the captain, which is also something that's interesting because he is the so-called leader since he is the captain. But he's not even on the starting 11.
Yeah.
And for now, it is Milner since he's the vice-captain. But that's an interesting thing to think about because when will we see Henderson maybe make the starting 11 again. Yeah. We don't know.
Do you think it's one of those where he just has to stake his place in one of the Carabao Cups or like Champions League matches, or do you think it's just going to happen naturally? He's just going to usher him back into the starting 11?
I think it'll come from a Carabao Cup or Champions League, because if I don't see a rotation player, which is crazy to call Henderson a rotation player, start those games, and instead he'll play the same three that would typically play in the Premier League, then that's a big sign for Henderson, because maybe he's doing something that's not as great during practice, or maybe he just doesn't have the quality that Klopp's looking for. But I doubt it, because after all, Klopp does put a lot of trust in Henderson. He made sure he stayed.
Yeah.
So, and I would say he does play the long ball better than the other midfielders that Liverpool have. So I'd say it kind of depends. I thought he would have a sort of case-by-case basis based on who they're playing to play Henderson, but these past three games he has the same starting 11.
Yeah.
Which is why it might be a different scenario, but we have to see more games. It is three games.
Yeah, I guess for these three games, they played West Ham, Crystal Palace, and Brighton, who are all teams that you wouldn't be scared of attacking-wise so much. So I guess looking at Klopp's mind, he's probably thinking that why not play Wijnaldum, who can, you know, venture out more forward and kind of help us more in the attacking side of things. Just another opinion to look at it. Yep. But, you know, just looking at this Liverpool side, do you think this defense is that good, or do you think this is just kind of the early days and you think we'll kind of see more of that old Liverpool defense, or do you think this is a new mentality that Klopp is basically saying, I'd rather win a game 1-0 or 2-0 rather than winning it like 4-2 or 4-3 in years past?
I think with this new defense, it's not necessarily new since
It's basically all the same players, but just more mature at this point.
Exactly. And the clean sheet streak that's at Anfield did start roughly in February.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a continuation. It's just people didn't really catch on to it until they noticed once they brought in Van Dijk, they had an immense amount of clean sheets and significantly less goals conceded. So, and I would say with the 22 shots from this past game against Brighton, the offense is still there trying to get as many goals as it can. It's just maybe they're not as clinical these past few games. But it's looking promising, honestly, because the defense is doing their job, offense is doing their job, everyone in midfield is doing their job as well. So I think over time, Liverpool will just get better and better because they'll play more and more together. And since it is, as you mentioned, the same core players, usually they will get better. So I think it's looking promising for Liverpool. Hopefully no one gets injured.
That's the biggest thing.
I don't think they
have the injury bug as bad as some other teams. I think they should be good. And plus Ox is going to be coming back. Not soon, but
next season.
Didn't realize it was that bad. Whoops.
It was a season ending injury.
Whoops. Did not realize it was that bad. But, you know, even without Ox, I mean, this squad is still really good. And, you know, I think they're just going to continue to push the pedal and continue to get better. I think with playing Brighton, I think Brighton is a team that I didn't think was going to be super good, but I thought they were going to be pretty decent. But they've shown these past two games against United winning, obviously, and then the game against Liverpool. They held their own against Liverpool. I mean, there was they pretty much held Liverpool in check. You know, once Salah scored, they still held them in check long enough that, you know, Chris Hughton kind of just let the reins out and, you know, added in like two more attacking players and just kind of went for it. They have nothing to lose. But I've been really impressed with Brighton. I think they're going to be a really solid side in the Premier League this season.
Yeah, I definitely think they're going to be mid-table.
Yeah.
I don't see them getting relegated.
Yeah.
And there were a few chances where Knockhart, he could have scored. It's just he didn't set himself up right and then just maybe was a yard wide of the goal. But
yeah. And then Glenn Murray has looked pretty decent too in these two games. I don't know what's going on with Glenn Murray.
He's very old, but he's still chugging along. Still chugging along. I would say the last thing I do want to kind of mention about this game is that Liverpool are pulling the wins. Even though they're not playing their best games, they're winning scrappy, which is a good sign for a Premier League title contender.
Yeah.
Because you saw this with City last season where there were a lot of games where they won.
Or they picked up a point because of just grit and last-minute goals like that.
Yeah, from like Sterling or something like that.
Yeah.
So although it is just a 1-0, it's very promising.
Mm-hmm.
That they are winning, even if they're not really the best team on the field for 90 minutes, or they're playing their best at all. So.
Yeah, you just that's encouraging sign to see for Liverpool, because it feels like in years prior Liverpool had to play not a perfect game but close to perfect game to, you know, play the way they wanted to play, but now they've kind of figured out how to win when they're not 100%, which is very, very dangerous thing to have, because that just shows how good of a team you are to be that dominant. Mm-hmm. But you know, Liverpool top of the league right now, riding high. Tyler's feeling happy. The last year's winners of the Premier League title, Manchester City, dropped points in the early Saturday morning game against Wolverhampton Wolves. I watched the game. I have some takes on it. First of all, I think Man City, as a United fan, I think they got very unlucky. I think the refs made pretty poor decisions. First of all, because Willie Bolly, the defender for Wolves that scored the goal, it was a clear handball. I mean, like, I wish you guys could see me. I'm like, he literally, like, pushed his hand out to the ball, and like no one saw that. I'm like, how did you not see that? He literally scored. And then Manchester City also, Sergio Aguero hit the post three times, and then Rui Patricio made a mean save, an absolute screamer of a save for Sterling, who just picked up the ball, shot it, and then Patricio just puts out his hands right there and saves it. But Man City, and then also David Silva should have had a penalty in the second half, because he was brought down by, forgot who brought him
Ruben
down.
Ruben Neves.
It was a clear like trip of the foot, but again, the ref didn't see it. But I think City created a lot of chances. They just got very unlucky, and it was just one of those days where, you know, things just don't go your way, but they still pulled out a point. But that brings on to a bigger point that I wanted to make. See what I did, the point on point? with the new clubs, I guess Wolves in specific, the money they invested, they've looked very solid, and they just showed people that they're able to keep up with Manchester City, and they never seemed like they were scared of like City or like scared of the team they had. They were just playing their game. They're very offensive, sitting back and hitting them on a break. I mean, that just speaks to how well they invested into their squad and everything. I mean, what did you kind of take away from that?
Yeah, I saw that Wolves, they had double figures in shots, which is insane. They're the third team that have done that since last season. Which is insane.
Yeah.
So Wolves, they came out no fear. They played at home, and then, although not all their shots are on target or really clear cut, they took their chances.
Yeah.
And they ripped a shot if they could.
Yeah.
And I feel like even though they were kind of lucky in that they did get the draw, because they did go out attack.
The luck kind of fell their way.
Exactly. Yeah. It fell their way, and it was against the champions too.
Yeah.
So.
Kind of need some luck to beat the champions or like. Mm-hmm. Escape with the point. But I was going to bring up another point. When I was watching the game, Willie Bolly, I know I just made fun of him for scoring that clear-cut own goal. I mean, not own goal, but hand goal. he made two, like, big clearance or big two, like, game-saving tackles in the box in the first half. One denying, I think, Sergio Aguero, and then one denying, I think, Bernardo. So I may be getting the names mixed up, but they were, like, very, very well-timed tackles, and I was very impressed by him by that. And just watching City play, I think City, I was never worried about City because they created so many chances that, you know, at the end of the day, I thought, you know, eventually they would score, but they didn't. But I think, you know, City and Liverpool, they just kind of like, they separated themselves from the pack in terms of like, they're always going to create chances. They're always going to be on top, and no one's really going to stop them unless you really like, you really play the game of your life, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I would say with Liverpool, last season attacking City, there have been some vulnerabilities that have shown against City's defense. If you do attack them, they do show a few gaps, a few holes in their defense, but it's just so many teams decide not to attack them or just can't, just don't have the ability to attack them. They don't have the quality of players.
Yeah.
But Wolves, since they did get their chances, and I would say it was very interesting that City, we kind of thought that they're kind of invincible. We kind of went into the mentality, it's like, oh, of course they'll get the W eventually, sometime this game. But they didn't, and that's kind of like a first that we'll see. And it's only the third game, too.
Yeah.
So
I think if anything, Wolves' point against City kind of showed every other club that, hey, they're not as invincible as like or scary as everyone makes them out to be. They're like, you can beat them if you just play your game, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And also, I was going to bring that up, you know, mentioned defensive vulnerability. Vincent Kompany had like a couple really bad back passes that almost let in Wolves, like pretty much let Wolves in into a goal, but they weren't able to capitalize. So just brings up the point that, you know, Kompany's just not the, even though he's a very great, good player, he's just not the same, you know, quality of player that we once saw like a couple years back. He's just getting older, you know.
He's an old guy now too. Yeah, everyone's just old.
Yeah, everyone's getting old, man. It's sad. But, you know, going beyond Man City, I know you mentioned you saw a very cool statistics with the discipline. Mm-hmm. Very very rash challenges out there in the Premier League this past weekend.
It was, how you say, a very naughty weekend.
You're going to have Cole for Christmas?
Cole for Christmas. But there were 4 recorded red cards from this weekend. From Richarlison, that was the most notable. He did like a tiny 1-inch headbutt. To Adam Smith in the Bournemouth versus Everton game, and now he has a 3-match suspension. Although some people were like, oh, that's so soft. You can't
headbutt.
Someone, even if it's a 1-inch headbutt.
Yeah,
because it's still instigating a headbutt. And because of that, he's going to have to serve a 3-match suspension, which is pretty big, especially since Everton are going to be facing some big opposition.
Yeah, and he's playing so well, too.
Yeah, he's also in form. But Arsenal will be facing Everton, and Richarlison won't be able to play that game. They're also facing Huddersfield next week, which is not too big of an opponent.
Yeah.
But with Richarlison, it could have been much easier, or they could have gone into this game, this upcoming weekend, with a lot more confidence.
Yeah.
Since Richarlison is on fire.
That's true.
And then also, speaking of that same game, Adam Smith also got a red card for pulling someone back, or ball cut back on a breakaway. So it was kind of a lot of karma, I would say, that Adam Smith got the red card. And because of that, I would say that's why Bournemouth and Everton drew 2-2.
Yeah.
And then the third red card that we saw over the weekend was Southampton.
Yeah, Højbjerg.
Højbjerg. You got a second yellow for simulation. So that teaches you. Diving's not great.
Yeah.
And if you are going to dive, you have to dive well. I noticed that referees, they look for people who dive by those who dive and put their hands up. Because if you put your hands up, then you're expecting to fall.
Yeah.
While if you fall with your arms down trying to break your fall, then it's more natural.
Yeah.
And it's something where you can't really fake it.
Yeah.
Because if you put your arms up, it's like you're expecting to fall. But if you put your arms down and fall, then the refs know it's not simulation, which is something I found very interesting. So for those who are divers, you should probably listen about that.
Look out for that.
Look out for that. And then the final red card from this weekend was Hogg from Huddersfield Town, although the game ended 0-0 against Cardiff. It was just kind of a rash challenge that the assistant ref saw on a breakaway. So it was an interesting weekend. We usually don't see this many reds in one weekend. Apparently, this hasn't happened since 2015.
Yeah.
Which is pretty significant, honestly. But hopefully, next weekend,
be a little bit more cleaner.
More disciplined.
As much as it's like funny to see like bad red cards, it's kind of ruins the fun of the game, especially if like they're both teams are going at it. Then once you throw a red card in there, one team has to kind of sit back, and it just kind of ruins the flow of the game.
Yeah.
But you know, going past that, and looking at another promoted team that just absolutely killed it this past weekend, Fulham. You know, they beat
Burnley.
John Michael Seri, or John, I don't know if I'm saying his name right. Seri, what is it? A 4-1 scoreline.
4-2.
Seri had an absolute screamer of a goal. Schürrle scored. I mean, Andre Schürrle
finally scored.
I mean, it's been a while since I've said that name in scoring. It's been a while, and then Mitrovic scoring. I mean, Fulham looked good, and like it finally seemed like, you know, Fulham were clicking on all cylinders.
Mm-hmm. And Sarri's goal was top bins.
Yeah.
Outside the box, top bins, 3rd minute of the game. What a way to open your goal-scoring
record
count.
Yeah, for Premier League.
That was insane.
And then we also noticed Ryan Sessegnon, their star young lad, wasn't even on the... He made the bench. He wasn't even on the starting 11.
Yeah, he was the player of the year for the English and Power Championship, and I would say Schürrle started over him,
mm-hmm.
and Schürrle did turn up for the game and scored, so it's not very unjustified. And they did get their first win because of it. So
yeah, I mean, and you know, I was gonna talk about this too. in terms of these newly promoted teams, it seems like the, you know, with the new money they've spent, the even like teams like that stayed in the division, they spent a lot of the cash they had, and they spent it on, you know, quality players and players that kind of made them better and not just random signings, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like all these teams have made really quality signings, and all these signings are finally turning up, and it shows that the discrepancy of talent is still pretty big, but it's not as big as it is in other leagues, and it seems that lesser teams can finally show their class against, you know, other teams in the Premier League, and you can have that quote-unquote cliche, there's never an easy game in the Premier League, unless you're playing like Cardiff or Huddersfield. But, you know, there's going to be those outliers like that. But in reality, it's kind of true that, you know, every team you play in the Premier League is going to give you a run for your money. And you just saw it with City drawing the Wolves. I mean, looking back last week, we just thought City were going to win like 5-0. But Wolves played a very good game, and they have very good players. And Fulham have very good players, and they spent the money well. They invested in their squad. And I think that bodes well for the entire league in general, knowing that it's going to be very competitive from, like, first game to last game.
Yes, and I did remember that we did mention that we looked at City's schedule and was like, oh, that's a free.
Yeah, we thought we were going to free 18 points. Yeah.
Free 18 points, and then they already dropped two.
Yeah.
And I would say it's great to see all the other teams in the Premier League, besides Cardiff. Just roasting Cardiff, but they don't have a striker. Yeah. So.
They don't play attractive. They just, like, knock it long. They're like, exactly. They're like playing in the 80s.
They do have a Filipino goalie, so
yeah,
here we go. Represent. But it's very cool to see all the smaller, so quote-unquote smaller Premier League teams actually making some big money big money signings, but just looking strong.
Signings
overall.
That are smart for their team. Mm-hmm. And even if they do splash the cash on big players, I mean, they're like working out. It's working mm-hmm. out. But you saw it, like, you know, this guy also kind of makes me sad at another point, seeing a club like Newcastle, who are so, like, historically big, but their owner, Mike Ashley, just won't invest in the squad.
He's a cheap buster.
He's so cheap. I mean, I just don't understand it. You've got, like, this very good manager. I mean, mm-hmm. this guy's won the Champions League before, or he's been to Champions League, and he's taken Liverpool to close to, like, Premier League titles and all that, and Liverpool and Chelsea, and he's coached at Real Madrid. You're not giving him anything. You're not giving him any incentive to stay. I just don't understand it. Like, you literally have a gold mine right here, and you have this wonderful stadium filled with so many fans, but you won't invest in the squad. I don't understand. Their squad is basically a championship side. Mm-hmm. Just add in like two or three new players.
Yeah, like it didn't really change much from when they got promoted.
Yeah, exactly. And like, you can't blame Rafa Benitez. I know when they played Chelsea, they basically lined up in a back five. You can't blame him. I mean, like he's basically doing as much as he can with the squad he's given.
I will say, even though he still has basically his promoted side from last season, he should still try to avoid doing five in the back, in my opinion.
Yeah, five in the back is just, I think we can all agree that it's not good.
It was not constructive at all because they had 19% possession, and the few times they did attack, they luckily got a goal, but then they also conceded an own goal, and they lost in the end. So they didn't really learn anything. That is something I learned from listening to another speaker, Jimmy Conrad. But Newcastle, they have to think like Wolves.
Yeah. Or Fulham, or Brighton, or, you know, just like, you know, kind of. Mm-hmm. And it's a transfer market-wise, but you were talking more tactics-wise.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So if they just sit back and then just concede, just, oh, we have the same team, we're not getting any big players, then they're just going to have to settle, what, maybe 17th, 16th, 15th place because they're not progressing.
Yeah.
They're just playing it safe. And, it didn't really work out for them, too. So
yeah.
I think all they can try to do is attack, but even then, their attack is not that great.
Yeah.
So they're kind of stuck in this limbo, and Mike Ashley does have to come in, but I don't know what's going to convince them. Cause
I know, it's sad because I was very excited when Benitez was hired by, you know, Newcastle.
Yeah,
I was like, oh, wow. I was like, you know, maybe if Benitez, you know, of course he got relegated that first season. He just didn't have enough matches to get his squad in. But, you know, once they came back into the Premier League, I thought, you know, maybe give him a couple, like, maybe 3 years, Benitez, you know, and maybe he might be challenging for Europa League or at least, like, you know, top table or, like, you know, the top half of the league.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, hopefully he was going to do that. But, you know, he's not – there's no investment in the squad, so he kind of, like, he stagnated. And I wouldn't be surprised, you know, after this season, he kind of just looks at the situation and be like, why stay here when no one's giving me any funding, and why not go to one of these other clubs in the Premier League or just go abroad somewhere else?
Mm-hmm.
What do you kind of see Rafa kind of staying, or do you kind of see him like leaving mid-season for another Premier League job or something like that?
I do not see him leaving mid-season, but I do see him leaving at the very end of the season if Mike Ashley... He's a very stubborn owner. I honestly do not see him having a change of heart and then saying, oh, you know what, I'll give you the funds. I don't see him doing that. The only way they'll change is if maybe they'll get a new owner. Yeah. But I also doubt that unless Mike Ashley sells.
Yeah.
But if that situation continues with Mike Ashley being the owner, then I think Rafa's going to leave because you can't really move on. You can't really progress if you can't bring players in.
Yeah, I feel bad. I just feel bad for Newcastle fans.
I feel bad for Newcastle fans, too.
Historically very good. Had Alan Shearer at one point. Mm-hmm. But just have an owner that
top
just won't.
Top goal scorer in the Premier League
just
all
won't
time.
Have an owner that won't spend the cash. But
and we were also mentioning it's like all these other clubs in the Premier League outside the top six, they're becoming more entertaining to watch. Like back in the days, you would not want to watch a Watford versus Crystal Palace game.
Yeah.
But these days, it's like, oh, this they actually
yeah, you
pretty
got Zaha, Deeney, Pereira. I mean, like, you got players all over the field now.
Exactly.
And then Newcastle are just running out Matt Ritchie still.
Exactly. It's like, do you want to watch a Newcastle game?
Yeah.
No.
Exactly. So, I think that's the consensus. But going on to another team, Watford. We both don't know what's going on with Watford. Three wins. I expected Watford to get relegated, and they're 3-1, three games in, three wins. I mean, they looked impressive, mm-hmm. And I mean, there's not like they're just like barely pulling games out. They've like dominated some games, man, and like Watford. I mean, what's going on there?
And Perea is pulling some strings.
Yeah,
very impressive.
Some bangers he's scoring,
and Ben Foster's been doing very well coming from West Brom, playing in the Watford goal.
Mm-hmm.
So
finally
I
get
mean,
rid of Horacio Gomez out there.
Oh, my gosh. Gomez is now on the bench. But that is very surprising. They've won 3 out of 3.
Yeah.
They got 7 goals, 2 conceded,
yeah.
Which is very impressive. And it's going to be very interesting to see when they face Tottenham Hotspurs next weekend.
It's game of the week.
So it's going to be... That's crazy when the game of the week is Tottenham Hotspurs
versus
Watford. Which... We both agreed in week one what's going to be the team that's going to get relegated. Like, Watford, it didn't look like they're going up.
Yeah.
Because they lost another manager.
Just, like, very toxic environment.
Very toxic environment. Or Charlison left.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
But what was there then? And then
there was no reason to think that Watford were going to do well. But here we are, 3 out of 3 wins. Surprise us all.
It's crazy. Yeah. But it's weird because Watford kind of do this where they start off very well, but then they just tail off. Do you kind of see them tailing off and getting really into the relegation zone? Because we do see this every year where it's like 2 games, 3 games. And I remember when Huddersfield first came – or no, was it Huddersfield or was it Hull City? Hull City, a couple seasons back, they start off the league two games in, two wins
oh,
in a row.
Right.
And everyone was like, whoa, Hull City, another Leicester City. And then they just completely, like, went – yeah, completely crashed. Do you see Watford – crashing, or do you kind of see them being semi-decent for the? I mean, obviously, there's no way they're going to keep this up, but mm-hmm. Do you kind of see them going semi-decent and finishing top half or like bottom half or mid-table?
I do not see them crashing because usually when you're at a high like this, it's rare to completely crash and just take strings of L's, but I do not think they have the quality
to
consistently
keep this up.
Every week. They'll probably keep this up for maybe a couple more games, I think.
Yeah, and they've got Tottenham and Man U for Watford fans' sakes. They better hope that, like, you know, keep it going for a little bit. But going to another team, Burnley, that were very, very good last season but have been very, very, very bad this season. And It's that whole Europa League curse where it's like, I don't want to be in Europa League. Every fan's like, I don't want to be in Europa League because this is exactly what happens. And Burnley are struggling, and they have, like, I believe they have a Europa League qualifier coming up in a couple of days, right before the United game. Do you kind of see Sean Dyche, you know, riding the ship, or is it just, you know, I believe that Burnley outperformed, like, all their players outperformed what their capability was last season, so. I'm not surprised by this, but I'm a little surprised by how sharp of a drop it is. Mm-hmm. It has been.
I'm also very surprised as well because Sean Dyche, he's shown that he's an excellent manager. And that's how they're in this opportunity to be in the Europa League. But because of that, they need to get more quality into the team because they don't have the depth in order to compete in Premier League. and Europa League.
Yeah, they brought in Joe Hart. That's not quality.
They have three keepers. So
it's like two of them are injured on like IR, exactly. Like and extended IR or something like that.
They didn't bring in any really big players, and they're trying to get Europa League, and that's a big kind of builder.
Yeah.
Or I would say not build, but something to attract players.
Yeah.
Something to bring to Burnley, but even with Europa League, all they brought in was like Joe Hart.
Yeah.
There's no other player that they really brought in.
Yeah.
And because of that, I don't think they'll be able to stay in the Europa League long.
Yeah.
Or even if they qualify.
Yeah.
But I really hope they don't get relegated, because it could happen
be very sad if it happens. Because I like Sean Dyche. He's not like, obviously he's not like a progressive manager, but he's like pretty decent out there.
Yeah, he keeps Burnley in.
Yeah.
So it's like the little train that keeps on going.
Yeah. It's always interesting, like, with these teams, like Burnley or, like, any other team, like Everton a couple years ago. Do you think they, like, you think Sean Dyche is just like, you know, let me look at the Europa League, let me just put that on the side and just get us disqualified or not, you know, like, let's just put our really weak team out there so we don't qualify? Or do you think that, you know, Sean Dyche is just like, you know, why not go for it?
I think Burnley are definitely going to try to go for it, because
for a club it's not very regular.
It's not every day where you see Burnley FC in the Europa League.
Yeah.
So I think they will definitely go for it in the Europa League, just like how Leicester went for it in the Champions League. And it'll be a big risk, because they will have to sacrifice some stamina of some big players in regular season games in the Premier League. And they will be, I would say, not exhausted, but they will be tired going into Europa League games, because they don't have the depth to rotate players regularly. So I think they'll go for it. Hopefully they progress and then they make history, but it will come with some costs. I can't really say what it will be, since we haven't really started Europa League or Champions League yet. But we'll see how Burnley do.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll update.
Yeah, and, you know, going on that, Chelsea won again. I believe that's three games, three wins for them. Chelsea, I believe, right?
I do know that.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Hazard started finally. I wasn't able to catch most of this game, but Chelsea, Newcastle, it seemed that the DeAndre Yedlin own goal was sort of like karma biting back DeAndre Yedlin, because leading up to Newcastle's equalizer from the Hazard penalty, people were saying that Yedlin kind of gave, I think, Alonso a bit of an elbow in the chest or face, a little elbow, and he kind of fell down, and it led to Yedlin crossing in the ball and Joselu getting his head on it. But Chelsea picking up another point, and Tyler and I have, like, talked about this in terms of Chelsea, even though they have three wins, it's just been not very convincing. It's kind of been like, you know, they kind of like pulled something out of the hatchet for them. Mm-hmm. I mean, from the Arsenal game perspective, they looked very dominant the first 25 minutes, but after that, they looked very, very bad. And then they finally figured out and they pulled out 3 points there. But even in this Newcastle game, it was very boring for at least like 75 minutes in, until Hazard finally got his penalty. And then they finally scored a late equalizer. And even the Huddersfield game, you know, Huddersfield had a couple of chances in the beginning. And we just kind of seen this, that Chelsea just really haven't been that convincing. But at the end of the day, they have 3 points, you know.
And, I mean, Chelsea's opponents, as we've noticed, they're not very good.
Yeah.
Like Huddersfield, I'm sorry, I think they're going to get relegated.
Yeah.
And then Newcastle, as we mentioned,
could get relegated.
Oh, gosh.
Or but could finish very low in the table.
Exactly. And Arsenal
will eventually bounce back and figure out some stuff.
Yeah, but right now they're like
very bad. Not very bad.
Not very bad.
But they're just teetering.
Right above West Ham.
Teetering, yeah. But yeah, Chelsea, you know, just kind of doing their own thing.
And Chelsea will be facing Bournemouth, who is also in good form. So I think, honestly,
that's going to be a good match.
That will be their biggest test.
Yeah,
besides
it'll be a good
Arsenal.
Because they don't play their next, they really don't play a big game until the Liverpool game on September 29th. So this would be a good chance for them to pick up some points. And, you know, eventually once they start playing the big boys, you know, seeing how they kind of handle that pressure.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, going at their team, Arsenal, once again, I mean, Unai Emery finally picked up his first win as an Arsenal manager. But, man, it was bad. It was bad for a good, like, solid half. I mean, it was terrible. at one point, the defense still just scares me because, like, I don't know why Unai Emery wants to play such a high back line with Mustafi and Socrates back there. It just seems like the defense is never in sync. And since they play such a high back line, it's like the forwards, all they have to do, the opposing forwards, all they have to do is make a little run and play it over the top ball. They're in. They're just in. I remember at one point, for leading up to West Ham's first goal, Felipe Anderson picked up the ball in the midfield, literally ran past the entire Arsenal midfield like they were nothing, ran past the defense, played the ball back to Arnautovic, and Arnautovic just hit a snapshot, low snapshot, to like the corner, and Cech couldn't save it. And West Ham were up 1-0, and like you should have just heard the Emirates crowd. I wasn't there, obviously, but hearing it on the TV, man, it was like it just felt like Arsene Wenger 2.0 again. It was just very dead silent, very booing, and like ugh. Is toxic. He's pretty toxic.
It was also not very good goalkeeping from checking that one shot, because it reminded me a lot of Mbappe's goal in the World Cup final against Subasic.
Where he's just like, ugh.
It was like a low driven outside the box shot.
Yeah.
Where I honestly feel
enough time to like dive and, you know, get to it.
Mm-hmm. I feel like he should have saved it, but in the end, Arsenal did pick up the W, and it showed that West Ham are still pretty bad.
Yeah.
Which is surprising.
Because they have Pellegrino.
They have Pellegrini, yeah. And they brought in a lot of good players. They spent £94 million on players.
Yeah.
But now they're 0-3.
They're still struggling.
They're dead last,
yeah.
Which is very surprising. But that now asks the question, is Pellegrini going to stay? Or
that's pretty crazy to say.
It has only been 3 games. But if they continue to not really show good form, which honestly I haven't really seen glimpses.
It was a little glimpse in the Arsenal game.
Instances.
Yeah.
But they haven't been consistently good for long periods of games.
I think it's still pretty crazy to think like Pellegrini could get fired from West Ham. I think he'll eventually, like most things, he'll just ride the ship and get back to normalcy. But that's just my take on it. I like how they kind of set up sometimes, even though their defenses are very shoddy. It's very, very bad in terms of, like, you know, I don't think West Ham's been a solid defensive side since, like, Sam Allardyce was there, so it's been a while. But I think eventually you saw, like, Felipe Anderson kind of showing off his skill, kind of showing how good he can be, and Arnautovic was clicking, and then he brought on Hernandez from the bench, and, you know, Jack Wilshere can finally, you know, kick on and get some form. I think they'll be fine.
Hopefully. I mean, they brought in a lot of players that a lot of people like.
Yeah. It seems like West Ham always brings in the used-to-be-good players or players that once played for big clubs that are just, like, you've kind of realized that weren't super... They didn't have enough talent to make it there.
Mm-hmm.
And they just bring them in. West Ham brings them in, like, oh, we'll be pretty solid now that we have, like, this conglomerate of, like, okay players. Used to be hype, but now okay players. But it just never seems to work out. It just seems like those players kind of feel like they're too big for West Ham, so they don't have to try as hard to, you know, be as good, you know?
Maybe that's where West Ham's going wrong. Maybe they got to recruit some younger prospects.
Yeah, prospects. I feel like, you know, with the new stadium, they were just trying to sell seats in a bit, but, you know, trying to invest in their squad. Like
MLS-esque, where they just bring in big-name players.
Wayne Rooney's Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
I hope not. Otherwise, they're going to get relegated.
No, but like we said, it's like only 3 games into the season, so there's a lot of hot takes to go around. There's a lot of, like, things to infer on, but we also have to remember 3 games in the season, so everything can shape shift. And Tyler mentioned this, that one win this early in the season can take you from bottom to all the way to, like, mid-table. So
exactly.
It's a whole bunch of chopping and changing, moving around. But we definitely have seen some trends that we'll kind of, like, pay attention to. But looking ahead to next week, this coming week, actually, we pointed out some big games. Even though there's not that blockbuster game that there has been these past couple weeks, there's still some solid games that we can look at. First of all, the Saturday morning game, 7:30, Leicester-Liverpool. This is a big game to see if, you know, Liverpool can keep that clean sheet, and let's see how they kind of handle a really big test, a very pretty decent team, I guess, that Liverpool will be playing, mm-hmm. Leicester.
They're facing Jamie Vardy. He's coming back from his red card suspension.
Yeah.
And James Maddison, someone they tried to pick up, but eventually just got Shaqiri instead.
Yeah.
I mean, Shaqiri's pretty good.
Yeah. what do you think the prediction will be for this one?
I think the prediction is Liverpool will continue to keep their clean sheet, because from the past games, Leicester have gotten their goals not really from
clear-cut chances is maybe like a deflection, own goal, or just Harry Maguire outside the box shot that just went through the entire defense. So I feel like Leicester are still trying to hit the ground running, are still trying to find their way. And they've gotten lucky, I would say. But I think facing Liverpool, who are a solid side, luck won't really push them through.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll get a goal. I doubt it. Score? But I think the score will be another 1-0.
1-0? All right.
If not 1-0. You know what? No, that's too pessimistic. Let's say 2-0. Because I feel like Salah, Mane, and Firmino, they're going to be hungry.
They're going to
be like, okay, we can't get another 1-0. So I think they'll go to King Power Stadium and win 2-0.
Yeah, I kind of see that too. Then we have another game, West Ham Wolves. We kind of just talked about how bad West Ham are and how good Wolves have been. I think this game, I think West Ham kind of finally figure things out, get a draw, pick up their first points of the season.
This is very interesting because Wolves also do not have a win.
Yeah.
So Wolves are also going to be looking for a win as well. So I feel like this game might be either 3-1 to Wolves or it might be 1-1.
Oh,
but
you just never know with West Ham.
I'm going to avoid saying two scores. I'm just going to say 3-1 to Wolves.
3-1 to Wolves. Oh.
The Wolves have been...
They have the talent.
They've been picking it up.
Yeah.
As we've seen. But meanwhile, West Ham, it's just like... they get one goal. But if, say, West Ham get the lead, usually if they concede one, they don't answer back.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say 3-1 to Wolves.
It's a fair scoreline. Chelsea-Bournemouth, we pointed this out because Chelsea... We kind of see this as being Chelsea's first... big test. I know Arsenal was a big test, but, you know, kind of being Bournemouth have been very solid. I think this game will Bournemouth with Ryan Fraser, you know, Joshua King, Callum Wilson, who's looked really good, you know, because I thought he was kind of banished to the wayside last season with Josh King playing so well, but Callum Wilson playing very well. I think Chelsea kind of suffered their first loss here.
Oh, for real?
2-1.
2-1.
I'm going 2-1 Bournemouth. I think Chelsea have kind of sneaked around and gotten lucky with a couple results. Feel like it's going to bite them in the back, and Bournemouth have been pretty solid.
I will say my prediction is kind of similar, but mine is 2-2 because Chelsea's defense is aight. They have...
very good attacking-wise.
They're very good... they're doing pretty good attacking. Hazard is back.
Yeah.
It's a little iffy that they got only 2-1 win against Newcastle, and it was an own goal and a penalty.
Yeah.
But I think Bournemouth are not as compact as Newcastle.
Of course.
Bournemouth will be without Adam Smith because of his red card, so they will be a little bit more vulnerable in defense. But I would think 2-2 because Callum Wilson is on fire.
Yeah.
Bournemouth are undefeated as well.
Yeah, Bournemouth have a knack for just making those crazy, like, 3-3 draws or 4-4 draws, something crazy like that.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised.
I think it will be 2-2 for me. Nyosha is 2-1 to Chelsea. So.
Yeah.
And then, no, wait, 2-1 to Bournemouth.
Yeah, 2-1 to Bournemouth.
Oh my
and
gosh.
Then. We got Man U Burnley. This will be an interesting game, seeing both teams are very struggling a lot right now in the Premier League. Manchester United really need a result. Burnley really need a result. Both teams coming in needing a result. I don't see a draw. It's either going to be a win or loss for both teams.
Mm-hmm.
I think United will get it fixed, and I think it will be 3-1. I think Lukaku will finally score. I think he'll score a brace, to be honest, and then somebody will pitch in with the goal. I think United will concede again because Burnley are very good at set pieces, so I wouldn't be surprised if Burnley get a nice set piece. Tarkowski.
Yeah,
whips in something, and then, you know, they get a goal from that. But, yeah, I'm going 3-1 United.
I'm going to say 2-1 to United, even though Burnley historically have been really good at home.
And pretty good against United, to
be
honest.
Pretty good against United. However, this season, as we've seen, Burnley's fortress of a home has not really been as great as before. And I feel like United do need to respond. So I think they'll get a 2-1, given that Burnley are vulnerable. United, I think, have a lot more quality than Burnley.
Yeah.
So I think they could sneak in 2-1. But I will say they will probably concede a goal.
And game of the week. You never guess it. Tottenham versus Watford. Game of the freaking week. Who would have thought? Who would have thought? Tottenham versus Watford. Tottenham coming off the big 3-0 win against United. Watford coming off that win against Crystal Palace. Both teams in form. I think Tottenham are going to take the cake on this one. I think Lucas Moura is going to go off again. And Kane is going to get a brace here. I feel like it's going to be a 4-2.
4-2 to Spurs?
Yeah.
Watford is home, but it's hard to say where the goals are coming for Watford besides just Perea.
Just so doing like
they
something
shut
crazy.
Down Perea, then it's like
yeah. You could have Deeney, but I don't know how much Deeney can give you.
They still Deeney is someone you have to get the ball to.
Yeah.
You can't really just go
and
under.
Andre so. Gray could do like some crazy mad run.
You could just run.
Yeah.
So, I think Tottenham will win this game as well. I think it'll be, I'll say 3-1.
3-1. Nice. Well, looking, you know, that was our predictions for this coming week. We thank everyone that listened in for the episode 4 of the Premier Pod. Please remember to rate, review it, subscribe to it, and please leave a comment and, you know, kind of tell us what you think about it and tell us some topics you would like for us to discuss more. And with that, you know, please expect, you're going to expect another episode from us, you know, this next Tuesday. But for that, this is Yush.
This is Tyler.
And we sign out. Thank you very much.
Bye.